This interview was produced for Red Eye, a 3-hour current affairs program on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 102.7 FM.
Around the world, people are weblogging from their laptops, altering billboards with cans of spray paint, and broadcasting their own news from homemade pirate radio stations. In so doing, these autonomous media activists are reclaiming the media from the for-profit realm and returning it to the public domain. Autonomous Media, Activating Resistance and Dissent, is a new book published by Cumulus Press. In the book, activist media producers tell the stories of how they're designing new media as tools for social movements. Andrea Langlois is one of the editors of the book, and she's joined me on the phone this morning. Good morning, Andrea.
Good morning, Lorraine.
Nice to talk to you.
Yes, great to be on the air.
Now, people often use the terms alternative media or independent when referring mm-hmm. to projects that counter corporate media. You choose instead to use the term autonomous media. What is autonomous media?
Autonomous media, is a form of alternative media, but it takes it one step further. Often the term alternative media can be used for just, say, ethnic media or any media that's not mainstream. So we wanted to go a bit further than that and talk about autonomous media, which is media that is independent from all of these things, but that is focused on social justice issues, and that is also usually organized in a cooperative, collective way. So there's those two levels that takes the alternative media one step further, and that makes it autonomous in the sense that all of the members have a say in what's going on, et cetera.
Now, tell us about some of the people who contributed to the book. What led them to become autonomous media producers?
I think a lot of people, I don't know if there's an actual, conscious decision or if it's just a need or, something that drives people. Just, I don't know why people become activists. I think there's sometimes just this need within them to do that. So I think that the people that have contributed to the book, we have people that do activist video, and I think video is just something that was, that they were drawn to, and then also social justice issues. So they use that tool for covering social justice issues and choose to focus on social justice and social change with their media tool. So it's hard to say whether or not they're media people first or activists first within social justice stuff or just both, and they just two things that come together so nicely. So in the book we have David Widgington, who's written about video activism. We have a wonderful article by Andrea Schmidt, and she writes about her experience as an independent journalist in Iraq last year. And so stuff like that, and I think it's situation, but it's also just a form of passion.
Now, there's one essay in the book on independent reporting mm-hmm. and one on a street newspaper. How do you think these two chapters challenge our understanding of what journalism means?
Well, I think the one on independent reporting is one I was just referring to, actually, by Andrea Schmidt, and she actually challenges media activists in a way that asks the question, can we actually use independent reporting to build solidarity with other movements, resistance movements in other countries? And she says, yes, we can, but she also challenges the way that we do that, and she says that we actually have to step out of these frames of journalism that are really hard to get out of in order to really do a type of media that's going to benefit people of a certain society, say for in Iraq, where in her reporting she says she wishes that she would have been able to come back to those people that she interviewed more often and to actually have them comment on the media that she had produced, but she never really had the time to do that because of the way that her reporting structure was, even as an independent journalist. And then the other article you've mentioned is by Isabel Mayubeik, and it's about street newspapers, and it's about how certain, how communities that are marginalized can use a medium in order to feel empowerment. And, there's street newspapers all around North America and through Europe, and so Isabel is really laying that out as a case study to examine, the possibilities of empowerment through the creation of media.
So it sounds like these methods of journalism actually disrupt some of the accepted tenets or frames of journalism.
Definitely they do. Like Isabel speaks a lot about disrupting this notion of the expert, and how the people she interviewed for this essay she's written, you know, that they're often people who've lived on the streets, who've been involved in a whole different kind of community, and they're really putting forward this claim that we are experts on our own realities, and the mainstream media is not, and that our voices have a value, right? So by her even interviewing these people for her article, it's giving them that power to speak. So, and that's exactly what they're talking about needing. So it's definitely a disruption of the way mainstream media stories, you know, news media in particular, stories are constructed and built around with the voices of experts from, you know, government and the institutions such as university and churches, et cetera. And so it's really a challenge to that.
Now, a few of the chapters focus on technology that most of us had never even heard of until a few years ago. What's the impact of new technology like web logging or blogging, as it's known? What kind of impact is that having on the landscape of autonomous media?
Well, I think we can't actually even say, you know, what the total impact is yet, because it's so completely new. And I think Dawn Paley, who's actually from Vancouver, in her essay is kind of exploring the possibilities of how you can use web blogging in social change movements. And I think that the fact that, though, we can say is that things like web blogging or indie media websites have made people who don't know how to build an HTML website or anything like that be able to publish news online, because it's so easy, and it's usually just a form that you fill in on the internet and then you push publish. So I think the ease of these types of tools and the fact that you don't need a degree in computer science to use them has just made it way more accessible to lots of people. And so there's that aspect of the user, of people being able to use it more easily, but then there's also the fact that it's putting all sorts of alternative information on the internet so quickly. Like indie media, for example, is such a major tool within protest organizing. And on a day of a really huge protest, if you go onto indie media, you'll see updates coming up every couple of minutes. So it really allows people to have up-to-date information about an issue as well. So I think there's, you know, there's a lot of things around a technology that allow activists to organize better and to share that information both locally and globally. So I think that's really, really important as well.
In looking at something like blogging, and I'm glad you described what it is, you know, said that you don't need to write HTML code to do that. It's a system that's accessible for people so that they can, you know, just do their text and publish it. Because I guess we can assume that people know what blogging is, but that's not necessarily true. So I'm glad you explained that. Now, do we still see in that, even though we have blogging, people have access to that publishing, do you see barriers or dangers there with blogging?
Well, I think there's always barriers. I think that there's always this thing we call the digital divide, and I think that we can't assume that everyone has access to the internet. So I think that is, of course, one of the dangers with these things. But hopefully people can use these tools in conjunction with other things. I don't think that people should just be on the internet. Movements like Indie Media, for example, they're trying to, people within this movement, within this network, which is global now, they're trying to find ways of also bringing indie media off the internet and finding ways such as, for example, developing technologies where someone like you could phone in your report and that will be put up on the web, but also ways to get indie media onto the radio, which is in most countries way more accessible than the internet, you know, especially in countries where the literacy rate is low. So I think there's also there's movements to try to bridge these two things and to make information that's on the internet accessible to people who don't have access and vice versa. So I think that's, of course, a challenge. But I think that media activists, you know, they're trying to be aware of those kinds of things and they're trying not to get their heads stuck in the internet, which is why many movements and many people, you know, engage with many different types of media, you know, from video to radio. Myself, I've done stuff with Indymedia, but I've done a little bit of stuff on the co-op radio in Montreal. So I think, you know, I think we all try to see this as like a holistic thing, and that most media activists don't just focus on one media. So I think hopefully that will keep us away from the dangers of getting stuck in the internet where not everyone has access to that information.
Well, there's a chapter in the book on culture jamming, for instance.
Yeah.
What's culture jamming, and how does that fit in with the bigger picture of autonomous media?
Well, I think our definition has been so large that we've accepted things like the street newspapers and culture jamming. And culture jamming usually refers to the taking of dominant messages and subverting them and twisting them in some way. I think the most famous culture jamming that we know of comes from the magazine Adbusters. And Tom Liatchis in his essay is kind of criticizing that kind of, to some degree, not horribly, that kind of culture jamming, and also talking about how to organize a culture jamming collective. In his collective, they would do things like they would just sit down and say what in their community on a visual cultural level was bothering them, and then they'd do something about it. So that could be they realized they noticed a billboard in their community that was promoting something or was using sexist imagery, and they would, within a couple of days or a couple of weeks, organize a kind of culture jam to either paste something up on that billboard or whatever their pet peeve of the week was. They would try to acknowledge that and do something about it within a couple of weeks. And Tom admits in the essay that it's not the type of activism that's necessarily going to change the world in a week, but it's also a form of empowerment, and it's also a way to show people in the community that you can actually answer back to dominant culture. And so that's really what culture jamming is. It's an answering back to this visual culture, to advertisements, et cetera, that are in our everyday environment.
Well, it's interesting that you talk about that, because yesterday I was out for a walk, and there's a lot of new dailies in Vancouver that mm-hmm. are mainstream dailies, and where I went for a walk, somebody had taken spray paint and just put a large blue X over yeah. all of the windows of the little distributors, and I just had a little feeling like, yeah, it was just kind of yeah. a way of responding, and it wasn't, you know, I mean, it wasn't analysis, it wasn't, you know, but it was just kind of like big, large X's over all of those.
And maybe people walking by would have to be like, oh, why would someone do that? And they have to build the analysis themselves, which was kind of something interesting about culture jamming. And it's funny because when I was in Toronto last week launching the book, someone had done the same thing, but they had actually written lies with a question mark. So it was kind of encouraging people, you know, in this mainstream newspaper, are these all lies or are they not? And you should answer that yourself. So
precisely.
I think that's the interesting part about culture jamming, too, is that it kind of forces people to make their own analysis, or just kind of, you know, maybe snap out of the daze that they're in while they're walking down the street.
Now, you write in the introduction in the book that it's not intended to be just an academic communications reader or yeah. an activist toolbox, but it's both of these things and more.
Yeah.
What do you hope the readers are going to be able to do with this book?
I think Frederick and I, when we came up with the idea for this book, we both had finished masters in communications for Frederick and media studies for myself, and we really noticed that this type of book in that realm didn't exist, that there wasn't many stories like this from a Canadian perspective. So I think one of our goals, of course, was for communication students and other people who are studying this kind of thing to have examples, you know, not necessarily highly theoretic, but really, you know, strong grassroots examples of this. But I think on that other level of activist toolbox, or, you know, for everybody, I think, you know, we're pretty clear on the fact that we called it activating resistance and dissent, in the sense that we want people to be moved to action, you know, and that's why the book is written by people who have done this stuff, not by people who have studied people who have done this stuff, but people who have been involved. And I think we really wanted to spread the message that, you know, you can do it, anyone can do it, and that, you know, there's all these different ways to get involved. So every chapter has a list of different links on the internet, and there's a lot of, within the text, there's a lot of examples of different groups that do this kind of stuff, because we really would love to see more people get involved and to act on this. It's not necessarily something to just study or read about, that it's something that's actually really easy to get involved in if you want to.
And just kind of furthering this this idea of activating autonomous media and this sort of give and take between media producers and their audience. I understand you've tried to figure out ways for the book itself to create interaction between you and your readers.
Yeah, we have. What we did was we launched a blog about 2 weeks ago, and if people go to the Cumulus Press website, which is at cumuluspress.com, they can access it. And so on the blog for a couple weeks already, we've had the introduction and the afterwards are. Afterward are always there if people want to read it. Chapter 2 is about pirate radio, and part of that chapter is in the radio voice, and so Marian Vanderzon has actually recorded that and put it is on the blog, and we're going to have all the resources at the end of each chapter are going to always be up there, and then we're going to actually rotate which chapters are up there, and we really are encouraging people to come onto the blog and to give us feedback, to engage in discussion with each other, to share other resources and stuff like that. So we didn't want the book to stop there. We wanted to at least offer this tool up if people wanted to get involved further in discussions about this, because, you know, it's one book, you know, it's 1 year of work on our part, and it's not the end all and be all, and we know that we couldn't include every single example in the world, you know, so we really wanted to create a space for it to go further so that, you know, the discussion doesn't stop there.
Great. Well, we'll invite people to go over to that space and get involved.
That's excellent. Thank you.
Thank you, Andrea. Nice talking with you this morning.
Have a good day. Thanks a lot.
All right. Take care.
Bye.
Bye. I've been speaking with Andrea Langua. Andrea is the editor with Frederick Dubois of the new book, Autonomous Media, Activating Resistance and Dissent. And the book is published by Cumulus Press, and it will soon be available at People's Co-op Bookstore and at the Simon Fraser University Bookstore in Vancouver. And to get involved in their blog and find out more information about the book, you can go to cumuluspress.com, and Cumulus is spelt the way the clouds are, Cumulus press.com.
Red Eye is produced by an independent media collective and airs on Vancouver Cooperative Radio. You can hear the program from 9 until noon Pacific Time, streaming live at cooperadio.org.